filters on what goes in and no filters on what comes out. Watch, pay attention, be picky on who gets access to your heart. It's the wellspring. Guard the gates, right? Choose wisely. Eat richly. Unbridled results on where this takes you. This is your one wild and precious life.
Jared, it's a joy to be with you in the space. Our wives have spent a lot more time together lately than we have, and that brings me deep joy.
Likewise.
Yeah, it's great to have you here. And for our listeners around the globe, these men that are like-hearted, I know many of them have been introduced to you through just different seasons of your mission as a teacher, worship leader, visionary in the kingdom. And then some may not have had that chance to connect with you, which today is a total joy bomb for that purpose. But give some context for our friends out there of what brought you to today.
Sure. Parents are missionaries. Grandparents are missionaries. Moved to Colorado when I was 9. I just started taking piano lessons living in Malaysia and grew up at this church that was just kind of exploding.
In Malaysia.
No, just at 9 years old, started going to New Life.
Gotcha. Yeah.
And it was a season of just radical fruit and energy and passion. And so that was like kind of all I knew.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So started taking piano lessons from the youth pastor who was also the worship leader. Went to Oral Roberts University, just like all the pastors on staff did, and my mm-hmm. brother did, and it was just the thing, you know. While I'm in school, I have to say this, the best song I've ever written is called Neptune's Taming of the Seahorse. And I wrote it while I was in college. The college professor was giving a lecture on Robert Browning and his poetry. And he reads this poem called My Last Duchess. And toward the end of the poem, there's a line about like Neptune taming a seahorse. And I'm thinking, man, that would be a great name for a band.
That's great.
So a couple weeks later, I'm in the auditorium of the university, Oral Roberts University, and I plunk out this song, which is my Moby Dick.
Wow.
It's Neptune's Taming the Seahorse. I have a tattoo of a seahorse on my arm. There is a sense that Neptune's the god of the sea, and the seahorse is the peon, and the main hook of the song is Neptune's taming of the seahorse came rather late for an average year, and I thought you might be the interested one out of all the idiots here. So maybe it's trying to say that God's judgment of man has been delayed, and you might want to key into that. It's a fun song, and I've never topped it. I've never written anything
That's
better.
Wild.
And no one's ever heard
it. Right,
right. Like you might put all the people that have ever heard it inside this room.
Oh my God. Jared. So what do you do with that?
What do you
like,
do?
Where does that fit in your story?
This is like I'm still in it. I'm still figuring out how to answer that question. I put my name down on an open mic night. I set up my keyboard and my roommate comes down and he's like, because I had my keyboard set up in my dorm room with this little lamp on it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm setting up for my 5-minute sound check and he goes, bro, where's your lamp? I said, well, it's up in the room. And he runs across campus, grabs the lamp, comes back, sets it on my keyboard, plugs it in, and he's like, now you can play.
Oh.
From that, every record that I do of that seahorse kind of music.
Yes.
Is what I call my lamp music. It's the lamp. Every time I play it, I have the same lamp.
Mm.
That's my like lamp music. Like I've done 3 or 4 records of this stuff. I don't know where it comes from. I just know what I heard and I'm saying it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what the songs necessarily mean, but they sound good in my mouth and they resonate in my soul and they come out. And what do you do with that? So I work up my kahunas to sign up for Battle of the Bands, right? I'm crazy.
With your piano.
With
and
my
your
piano
lamp.
And my lamp.
Oh, buddy, you so, are crazy. I'm feeling tightness in my chest right now.
The night before the performance, I call 2 guys, an upright bass player and a guy on a djembe. And I'm like, you guys want to play with me? We have 2 songs. So we rehearsed the 2 songs.
The night before.
The night before. And I go up, I play 1 song. Stand up from the piano and I go over to the microphone and there was the audience of people and people had like their, I saw a textbook in someone's lap, an accounting textbook. And I went up and I said, can I borrow this? I take the textbook, I open it up to a random definition and I just read the definition into the microphone. I put the book back, I give it to the person, I go back to the piano, play the 2nd song. And we won. We won $300.
Oh man.
So I'm like, I think I have something. Right?
It sounds like Matthew McConaughey in Green Lights. I don't know if you've read that. Like these insane stories of like just initiation, right?
Yeah.
Like that's just a moment of like putting it all on the line, not knowing how this is going to go. And in doing that, you discover something that's deep within you.
Yes.
I mean, it's the truest you that you don't even understand, but you have to let that thing fly.
Right. I start playing in coffee shops and bars and wherever, and Barnes & Noble. I mean, dragging my keyboard here, there, and everywhere in the back of my hatchback. And I thought I was going to move to either San Francisco or like an LA or New York and just give it a shot, like just start in the seediest places you can imagine. And every door I tried to do for myself, like didn't land.
Mm-hmm.
And my worship pastor at the church I grew up in, Ross Parsley, he's like, man, can you please come back and just do like a year with us, help us out? And I was a total scoffer and I'm like, dude, I'm like, so not into your thing. Like, I don't really want to.
Because it was like the church thing or the I grew up here thing or
both
something
of
else.
It.
Okay.
Both of it. And all those doors shut and I'm like, well, it's a year. What the hell? You know, I'll try it. And so I came back and I'm like so not into it. I'm like so Mr. Judgment. I have like, I'm just like not, I just stand there, I play keys or whatever. I love music, but I'm like, we can train monkeys to, this is like karaoke music.
Mm.
We're just doing sing-along songs. Like this is not, meanwhile, you know, I'm like studying jazz and classical and my mind's being blown by this world and this history and this together, you know, this story. And yet we're like doing, you know, I've got the life of God in me. I've got the life of God in me. You know, it's like these kind of like Christian jingles.
Yes.
You know, you're like, are we in a Big Red commercial?
Right. Where's the life? Right. Put me in a seedy bar in New York with people that are coming alive.
What are we doing?
Oh my gosh.
It just became a category that was like too prescribed.
Yes.
It was so familiar that we had just squashed it to death, you know?
Mm.
It's like, how many ways can you do a French fry?
Mm.
Like really? If you've grown up in America, have you not had your fill of French fries yet? Mm. Is there one French fry that you just are dying to taste? I don't know, because we've kind of we nailed that one, you know, given us a few decades, and I think we got the French fry down. And that's a bit how the church offering, the church gathering has connected.
Well, and as I think of your story, that was the rising of the megachurch, right?
100%.
You're talking about the energy, the power, the growth up and to the right.
Yes.
That was working for growing that system.
So I have a theory that religion follows retail.
Wow.
And because my freshman year of college, I thought Walmart was the best. It was like, this is, yeah, what are you doing? Well, let's just go to Walmart.
Right. Get everything in one stop.
That would feel
cheap.
That would feel amazing. Like, let's go.
Wow.
Right. And now I feel like I should take a shower after I've gone to Walmart. Right. I'm like, ugh. I don't want to do that anymore, right? Like, I go to Walmart.
Yes.
But that's been my similar, you talk about the rise and the fall of the megachurch. It mirrors my experience with Walmart in my life. And that's where I come up with that theory of religion follows retail. Because retail is like worship. It's communal worship. And so we want, once we've established that space in order to worship, we replicate that in the, I guess, the authentic religious space or the Christian space in America.
No, Eugene Peterson has this profound book, Run with the Horses, on the book of Jeremiah.
Yeah.
He has a great quote in it that says, if people are not satisfied, he's talking about, he's a pastor and he's a pastor of pastors, right?
Yes.
And he's reflecting on decades of change in the church culture. And he says, if people are not satisfied, we'll find a way to woo them back with better publicity, glossier advertising. We'll repackage church under fresh brand names. Since Americans are the world champion consumers, let's offer the gospel on consumer terms, reinterpreting it as a way to satisfy their addiction to more and better and sexier. And Jared, what's wild, he goes on later in the book to say the huge irony is that the more the gospel's offered in consumer terms, the more consumers are disappointed.
Wow.
You live that story.
Tons, yeah.
I mean, you had a front row seat and you were asked to be in leadership.
Oh,
in it.
Absolutely.
I'm so curious what that did in your formation as a man and as a man of God,
right?
Like, you are kingdom hearted. And so you want to be at your post stewarding all that he's entrusted you to your care. And that was your context, right? Does that describe 100%.
It? Yeah. Recipe equals wreckage. That's exactly it. Yeah.
Okay, so take me into that. If you're willing,
yeah.
I want to take some risks. Like, you're young man. You're right in that space of who am I? Like, what's my mission? Right? Wanting to set out on adventure, like you said, and even that attraction to the seediest places to like just see what happens.
Yep.
And now you find yourself really gifted, being kind of propped up to help like build this thing.
Yeah.
So take me into kind of the mess of the whitewater there and what's going on in you, because obviously you can articulate things in your 40s now that I'm sure you didn't have words to
clue.
It all there. So take me back there as a young man and what that's like.
I come on staff and first, in this context, no one makes a decent salary. You work for beans.
Yep.
But you get like these trips and like basically free lunch, you know? And so this is the tangle of like big opportunities, right? So that kind of keeps people like hungry.
Right. It's kind of a vibey culture, right?
Totally.
It's really speaking to those felt needs in the short term.
Yep. So we're on a staff retreat. and we're having a prayer time as a staff. And I'm sitting there thinking, like, what am I doing here? Like, I just don't think I want to do this. Mm. Like, I'm just not, I don't think I'm into this. We had sung some worship where people are praying, and one of the guys is playing his guitar. He's playing this chord progression, six minor to the one over three to the four, and he just keeps playing on repeat. And I grab a yellow pad, and I start writing this prayer. And it's, "You are the source of life. I can't be left behind. No one else will do. I will take hold of you. I need you, Jesus, to come to my rescue." So I write out the lyrics of this song. And I remember after the time, I think I'm just like, I'm just hearing like this melody. I was telling one of the guys, I'm like, I'm hearing this melody. And so I play it out. And meanwhile, maybe a week later, I am part of one of the tasks is to lead at these 2-hour prayer meetings for the interns. And so you're just, you know, at the piano, like noodling for long periods of time and then singing here and there. So I sing out the song. And then I probably tried it at a youth service or a small group or one of the smaller contexts. So it ends up going on the first Desperation record. I remember getting, and my wife and I are just like newly married. I just moved out of my parents' house. My dad helped me fix up this old house downtown. And I get a check for $500.
Wow.
For this song. And I'm like, this is insane.
Mind-blowing.
It's almost like this shouldn't be reality.
Yes.
I can't make sense of this. I was responding because I was pissed. That pretty sure I was led here.
Yes.
And it's not resonating.
Jared, before we go into more of your story, this actually feels like a poignant space to pause and to actually invite our listeners into one of your songs. What I love about this song is that it's helped me as a man of action, a man engaging, a man coming through. There's a sort of cry of your heart that comes through this song that just resonated with me, where you're saying, I need a rescue. You're saying, there's no one else. There's no other name by which I'm saved. I'm asking that you'd capture me with grace, you acting. And from that place that I would follow you. And there's just this confession that the world has nothing for me. What I need is you, Christ, to come to my rescue. These words have just been powerful, and I've used this song to recover the truth that I'm a son who stands in need. And it's God's movement towards me. It's his rescue and his redemption that reconnects me as a branch to the vine, that fuels my body, my soul, my spirit. His life infuses my mind and will and imagination. So friends, before we dive into the behind the story, let's go into Jared Anderson's rescue.
of life, I can't be left behind. No one else will do. I will take hold of you, 'cause I need you, Jesus, to come to my
Jared, there's something so pure and genuine in the offering of your heart through the song. I'd love for you to take us back into some of the story behind Rescue.
Now other people need to sing that. And I make money?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I just pulled that out of the air. Like, that's not a real thing.
When you're talking about, like, kind of a culture of capitalism,
right?
When you're trying to steward what's been entrusted to your care, you're being true to your mission, but in a culture of monetization.
Totally.
Right? We don't trade things and activity anymore. We have money as a means of exchange.
Yeah.
And so now all of a sudden, there's this whole different value system of, it really gets down to the integrity. And I don't mean just morality, but like integration of your soul, right?
Correct.
How do you walk in that? And here you are, a young man.
Totally.
And at that time, $500 is a bunch of money.
Yeah.
And so you don't have yet the miles and the interpretive grid to know how to walk with that with integrity without just getting stuck one way or another.
And who do you talk to about that?
Yes. There are some older men, though, leading this this megatropolis, right?
Yeah.
And help me understand, young, passionate, gifted, obviously, you know you've got something, and you're a guy that isn't going to kill your heart, right? You're a pretty alive guy, and you're under authority.
Yeah.
I guess best way I think I'd name it is men in power that can use you for something.
Right.
What's that dynamic?
Yeah. It's prescriptive and casual and the response to the question, like, man, this is strange. Like, this is weird. What do you do with this? They're like, yeah, I don't know. Enjoy. That's about as far as it goes.
I mean, so literally what you're describing now is they don't have much more in their formation.
Yeah, just
they're just building. I mean, they're kind of doing what you're doing a little bit in front of you.
100%. Yep. Totally lost. Just like taken as it comes and no clarity on, no, this train isn't about that. It's about this, you know?
Yes.
And that's, you know, here's what that money's for. And here's how it fits into the scene, fits into the story.
So what did you do? You're in the kind of the mega church model, and you're there for a while, and you're producing, and yet there's still part of you that wants to be in a seedy bar that doesn't fit here with the Seahorse, right? You want to tame the Seahorse.
Nobody gets the Seahorse.
They would probably scratch their head going,
they're like,
what else you got?
Yep, that's it. That's entertaining.
So what was happening to you? What did you do? What did you do with your heart and these desires? And where did you go, like, WTF? Like, this is not okay.
Yep.
I'm not a part of this. And, like, the wheels are coming off the bus. And no one's talking about it.
So Rescue, check for $500. Fast forward maybe a year. Publisher calls. He's like, just so you know, this next quarter, your check's going to be over 10 grand. And now I'm like, crap. People, like, this is a thing. People are going to think I want to do this.
Mm.
I don't even want to do it. Like, I'm the Seahorse guy. I'm not even into this. I believe in all that, but it's not like I don't want this road.
Yes.
Right? So I'm like, and yet I can't ignore the fruit of it where people are like, man, this, I mean, I'm getting like emails like, I pulled over the side of the road when this song came on the radio and wept.
Mm.
Right? Like, I'm like, okay, that's real. That's real. I don't know what to do with all. I don't know what to do with this. So I didn't feel like I could leave. I didn't feel like I could just like throw the middle finger and be like, yeah, have it. I'm out. So that's the tension of like, what am I stewarding?
Yes.
And what does it mean for me to be here and to do these things and for me to play down at Jack Quinn's and play the Seahorse stuff and then go to a lot of Christian parties and play worship songs?
Yeah.
And it was very, very, very conflicting. Like, that's just so, such a mild way to say it. But yeah, it's splitting.
And all the while, you're living in both stories.
Both stories.
So you're full tilt worship. Now you're Jared Anderson worship leader.
Yeah.
And Jared Anderson desperation band leader. Mm-hmm. And doing side hustles for other people that the church community just doesn't get it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So then, you know, spoiler alert, it's the rise and the fall of the mega church, and it blows up 100%. Mm-hmm. And you're kind of in that context. I mean, you had a front row seat. Describe what that was and what that did to you as a man.
Yeah. It didn't really shock me that it had happened. Because, let me say this, my parents, here's what it looked like growing up, middle school, high school. Saturday nights, somebody gave them a key. We would go in the church, and the auditorium had the flags hanging from the ceiling.
Of countries all around the world.
Countries all over the world.
Okay.
And they'd be like, just go up and sing. And I would bring my little spiral bound books with the chords, and they would walk the rows and pray over the nations. And I would sing my guts out for an hour and a half every Saturday night.
Wow.
Right. They could never get the visibility from leadership that I was getting.
Mm. And here they are, like the saints, right?
The saints, right? Wow. Just pouring it out.
Wow.
But I know as we move, you know, as I go out of college and we're starting to have children and I'm in this world, I know things about this world that they are not privy to.
Yeah.
Right? So when the shakedown, when the explosion happens, they're more shocked than I am.
Mm-hmm.
It all came out on the news. All the lies were as clear, crystal clear, like for everyone to see. I didn't cry. Mm. I didn't cry for that. I cried a lot of other things, but not for that.
Yes.
Am I... So, I mean, you're all like, yes, there's deep emotion of like, wow, this is just so big. We just got everyone just got so blindsided. Yeah. And the fallout and the emotion and the future and all those questions. We used to all, because our kids were tiny, we would all, a bunch of people on staff, we would get babysitters every night and pick someone's house and go and talk all night long.
Mm.
Like, we did that every night for weeks, not knowing like what's next or how it happened. I'm just going back and over, and what are you gonna do if we don't have a job next week and all that kind of stuff. Like, it was profound.
Yeah,
it was so intense.
When you look back now as a man, as a husband, as a father, how did that reckoning, I guess I'd use that word, form you?
Beautifully.
Mm.
Mercy.
Mm.
So merciful. I mean, I see it as mercy on the senior leader that he's found out that you don't have to live in these lies.
Yeah.
Mercy for us in that we're like, we don't have to live as some sort of prom queen group. And when we're all like all insecurely attached to our position and competing with one another and suspicious and all the false camaraderie, you know, and mixed with true camaraderie.
Yeah. Right.
Totally mixed.
Totally. Right. The kingdom was woven into that, right?
Totally.
They weren't clear lines.
No. So, and I mean, those relationships, I'll always have. Like, we walk through fire together. And I'm still close with some of those. I mean, we've different paths and different cities and whatnot. And some of those relationships still resonate so strong because of what we've walked through. But it, yeah, it just, you know, it did changed what success means. That's what it did.
So then and now, how would you put words as a man, though it's subconscious, but at the time, success for Jared Anderson is this. And now that you're consenting to it, really a deeper place of being fathered, initiation, death, this is what success looks like.
Yeah. Not failing at life. Not winning the game and failing at life. Like, how do we not fail at that? How can we keep that primary? That's the whole deal. And that was helpful because it just looked like we were winning at life. We weren't. We were not winning at life. This experience totally, let me just say, developing in that environment, megachurch environment, shattered friendship. I just really sucked at making friends because it was such a insulated false friendship. I thought these were my friends.
So there was so much culture of what you would call friendship, but in fact, there wasn't authenticity. There wasn't confession. There wasn't safe place to be unhinged.
Right. And we were all so into the same thing. How there wasn't any like variety or like, and that was a thing, man. The fathers that I was under, they didn't have any friends either.
Wow. So they're all swimming in the same polluted water.
100%. And so I'm going, man, I have no model. My dad didn't really have great friends. I didn't see friendship in his world as like, wow, that is rich. I can't wait to experience the riches of that.
Mm.
Riches of Jesus, riches of presence of God, riches of life in the spirit or the kingdom pursuits, 100%. But the riches of authentic friendship, no.
So young marriage, young kids, on the outside, it's all blowing up. How did you then move towards that? Went looking back where you went, this is the stake in the ground. I choose friendships. I'm winning at life at all costs. Because what's fascinating, I can think now over the last 15 years of moments that our lives have crossed over where I've deeply benefited from the impact of your life, of the fruit of choosing those things. And I'm thinking of, you know, attending a marriage retreat in your basement and this intimate couples experience where I was just blown away by this deep revelation of what's possible in partnership, in marriage, and then friends of Club 21 and the joy of those December, you know, events when they were like kind of off the radar. They weren't a big to-do. They were just this rogue thing that I think you went for because you wanted to.
Yeah.
So take me back to the transition and go, where'd you go? Oh yeah, it's a narrow road and I choose to let some things die so that I can pass through to a greater life.
Yeah. big shakedown with Leader 2006, jumping into 2008, we're like, we've had our third child. It's time to move houses. So we had bought some land, like a 5-acre piece, and we're getting ready to build a dream house. And I get cold feet because I'm like, I grew up at this church. It's the only job I had out of college. And now I'm 28. And if we build this house, and my life's not going to change. Mm. And I'm kind of the poster boy for this place. I have born with a silver spoon because I grew up here. I should be clawing at the ground at 28, like fiery, like burning, and I'm bored.
It's well said.
I'm unchallenged, and no one's like, Anderson, get over here. Like, this is terrible. This is terrible. Get it together. What are you doing?
Right. Well, no one's casting a vision for something better, right? Everyone's telling you how big this story is rather than listening to you saying, I hear you say, it actually feels like a pretty small story.
Totally.
Like, what's going to invite you into something bigger?
Yeah. So I'm like, and meanwhile, it's like, oh, do you want to go, you know, play at this conference on the other side of the world? And the answer is like, not especially. Mm. Not especially. So I'm like, we're going to build this house and nothing's going to change. I'm on a trip. My wife is with our three small kids back in visiting her parents because I'm gone. I call from the hallway of a hotel room at like 10 o'clock at night. And I'm like, I'm having second thoughts about the house. FYI, don't ever do that. It's so stupid.
Valid, reasonable context is everything. Bad idea.
We learned to name that later of take it to the tub.
Yes.
We have a bathtub that we can sit in that it's wonderful. And we could have like a hard, we can say delicate things from a place of love and connection. That was not it. So it's like, I'm having second thoughts about the house. And we go through 3 months of fighting, total disconnect. I'm starting to play the God card as me as like, oh, I'm the head of this household. And she's like, buzz off, you know, don't feed me that. I'm not buying that, right? And I'm like, because I'm desperate for resources and backup because I don't have anyone. I have no one telling me, dude, here's why you're saying that. Yes. Here's what this means to you and ultimately what it means for her, because this is really meaningful for you. Don't give this up. Mm. Like, this actually isn't about the house, right? You're fighting for something.
Yep.
Like, let's get in here. Like,
and someone to shepherd. Understanding her heart and saying, here's what's valid about what she wants.
Here's what the house means,
right?
To her.
And so, and these are two different stories that somehow fit together.
So, we end up going to this older couple in the church. We're like, well, we either got to see a counselor, or we're going to go find an older couple. They're like, Jared, you're not unhappy with your house, you're unhappy with your life.
It's beautiful.
What do you want to do? So begins the journey. I'm like, yeah, I can't build this house. We end up moving to Nashville. I'm like, so I didn't need to get a job. Like, I've got all these song royalties. Like, I'm 28, 29. Mm. It was one of the most beautiful years of our marriage and our family because it was like, we just totally out of the context, no expectations. I don't have to be anywhere. I don't have to be someone for something for someone.
Yes.
And we're just allowed to kind of reexamine and reawaken.
It sounds like it's the first time in your story where you really got to ask the question genuinely, who am I?
Yeah.
And what do I want?
Totally.
And who is this woman I'm married to?
Right.
Because equally, she came into the tornado that is this system.
Yep. Yep. So we're there a year and I'm feeling like, man, I don't think we're from Tennessee. I don't know.
You were not thinking about playing at the, what is the blue?
The bars.
Yeah, to get the Grand Ole Opry playing up on Second Avenue. Right. That's not your primary scene.
Yeah. I'm like, I mean, there's a lot to take in there. And the scene is vast. Mm-hmm. And there's so much, like, there's so many people that are so into it, which makes it dynamic and fun and a bit saturated. Mm-hmm. And I just, again, feeling like an outsider, like, I don't know if we're from here. Like, my kid's going to be in eighth grade before I feel like we're from here. Mm. And that's a long commitment. I don't know if I'm really there. I don't know if Colorado's that broken. I think I just needed to break from the context of the megachurch. So in that year, my wife is like, she kind of just lets go of the house. She like, we had all the drawings done. She like didn't pull the plans out. She's just like, okay. She kind of starts to make peace with like, I don't know if I need the house right now. Like maybe there's some other things to explore. And the total change is like, I was ready to go back and build the house.
Wow.
We were there for exactly 12 months. I'm driving the moving truck back. And I'm like, I know I'm not supposed to go back on staff. I just know. I can't do that. And 7 days after we arrive, we break ground on this house. And I build this house with my dad and my cousin. Mm. And it's like, okay, here we are. This is it. I don't know what's going to happen, but I do know where it's going to happen.
There's this great quote from Boyd Vardy, the Line Tracker's Guide, that he says, I don't know where I'm going, but I know exactly how to get there.
Wow.
It's just this really profound idea of tracking an animal in the wild where you don't know where he is. I mean, that's the whole idea of following the track, but it's the next first track.
Yes.
And just that idea of like, there's something very profound and even like mystical about you guys are actually building a house and it's the same geography, but now it's a new story. It's you and Megan and these kids and you get permission to ask the deeper questions and even begin to listen into the Father's heart for you of like, how do I respond to God? How do I respond to what God's wanting me to do rather than just what church is inviting me to do? Jared, I know from your story, there is so much more that we can get into, but this feels like a portion for episode one. So what I'd love to do is pause here. Just invite our listeners to linger in this conversation thus far and just notice what's surfacing in you. Notice what is getting stirred. It might be that theme of the rise and fall of the megachurch. It might be the theme, Jared, that you've called out where we find ourselves down the field in something like class four or class five rapids, and we realize there isn't a guide, that we're missing wisdom's long view. We're missing the voice of a father, and we notice that the soul is searching for a father. It might be the theme that some piece of our heart was neglected, mishandled in a season's past, and it's time to reconcile that in our life in God. It might be that theme that took you to Nashville, where you knew there was a time to uproot, that you needed to leave your context in order that you could see it more clearly. It might be some other theme that the Spirit is bringing to your heart. But friends, I want to pause here with you and invite you into 90 seconds of consideration to just slow it down a little, recover your breath, to tune in to the geography of your soul and tune out the distractions for 90 seconds. And Jared, I'd love to pick up with your story and perhaps feature another one of your songs in episode 2 of this series. So friends, thank you for joining us. You can find this and other resources for your kingdom apprenticeship at becomegoodsoil.com. And you can find Jared Anderson's music everywhere music is sold. Thanks for joining us.